Lord Christ, be on my lips and in all of our meditations, that the word spoken and the word heard may be in truth your word. Amen. During the Easter season, in place of an Old Testament reading, we get passages from the Acts of the Apostles. The text is about the formation of the early church, and we're supposed to learn from the apostles how to act in the world and run our churches in the reality of the resurrected Christ. What we learn is that the early church is not that different from the modern church. People are, after all, still people, and we have the same tendencies and squabbles. Peter is dealing with a pretty classic situation about who to let in and under what circumstances in order to still hold your identity as a church. He's confronting a situation in which he's serving a church full of Jewish followers of Jesus. We'll call them the original Christians, who are upset that he has reached out to the Gentiles and made accommodations for them to find their own space in Christian worship. The issue was around eating non-kosher food, but the principle is that they were not sufficiently orthodox and traditional, so that their worship was, in turn, not seen as appropriately holy. Peter himself starts off in this camp. When the vision of the sheet with the food comes down, God tells him to eat, and he says no, because that food simply isn't right, and he has never eaten anything that was deemed unclean. He basically says to God, "No, let me explain this to you, O creator of the universe and giver of the law. That is not holy, so I'm not going to eat it." You see, Peter had his limits. Teaching the Gentiles, okay. Preaching the gospel to them, fine. Converting them, baptizing them, all good. He even excelled at all of those things. But eating with them, sharing real community, not only changing them, but being willing to be changed in return, now that was just a step too far. And that's where the problem lay. There couldn't be real outreach to Gentiles unless Peter was willing to eat at their tables. No real community could exist without breaking bread together. How can you teach anyone about communion, the shared bread and wine around one table, if you aren't actually willing to eat with them? But initially, Peter was choosing his personal idea of holiness above reaching out in love to these folks. That is, until God sends the sheet the third time and tells him to never again call anything unclean or unworthy that God had already declared holy. To understand Peter's perspective, we have to remember that religion, for so long, had been about setting boundaries and building walls, both figuratively and literally. Think about the history of Israel that Peter would have counted as his own history. After the Exodus, they set out to establish the borders of their land and to keep foreigners at bay. They even set boundaries on the limits of each tribe, Judah here and Benjamin there, Reuben up in the far corner, and so forth. When the exiles came back from the captivity in Babylon, one of the first things they did was to rebuild the wall of the city. It's what the whole book of Nehemiah is about. They built walled cities to control the coming out and going in of people because they thought strong walls make for a strong religion. They worked at it in shifts, night and day, until it was done. Then there were the more metaphorical boundaries. Don't eat that. Wash at these times. Don't touch anyone who's sick. You must be circumcised to be counted among the Jews, and so forth. You can see how Peter would think that keeping these rules in place was so important. It seemed to be the most central aspect of the religious life. except it actually wasn't. Walls can never be the center, by very definition. They are the extremities. And this is what Jesus is trying to remind Peter in the vision. It's as though he's saying to Peter, you're spending all your time walking around the perimeter, and you've neglected the very center. You're always looking outward, but what about the heart of the matter? You're spending so much time securing the walls that you've forgotten what is within the city worth protecting. Look to me and remember what I taught you. Otherwise, there's nothing worth proclaiming, much less protecting. Most of us and our churches suffer from the same problem as Peter. We construct walls of rules, set down principles as boundary markers, and pile up vast theological doctrines and beliefs, all so important, we're sure, in an effort to create a solid structure. And we tend to those barriers constantly, shoring them up to make our faith secure, we think. But all the while, the only solid thing we have is sitting right in the center, lifted high on a cross that he might draw all people to himself and have them eat at his own table. He stands there beckoning us to stop turning our back on the center of our faith, the hope of our religion, and instead to focus on him and to intentionally focus on making him clear and inviting others in through our love for one another. That's the goal, that others would know, not that they would be held at bay, but be drawn to the Christ that we know, that serves as the source of our love and the center of our faith. Sometimes we act as though Jesus' final admonition to his disciples at that Last Supper was, by this all people will know that you're my disciples, that you pray with all the right words at all the right times, believe every article of the creed with all your heart every time you say it, don't associate with the wrong kinds of people, give a certain amount to the poor, remain absolutely holy, whatever that means. But that just isn't what he said. To be honest, sometimes I think it would have been easier if that is what he had said, instead of what he had actually said. But what he told them was, by this everyone will know that you're my disciples, if you have love for one another. That's what he's reminding Peter and us in this passage. That the surest sign of following Christ, of pointing to the center, is to love the other in a notable, sometimes uncomfortable, and even boundary-stretching way. I've never heard anyone come to church and say, my neighbor was just so pious that I decided to follow her one Sunday morning to see where it was she was going. I have, however, heard people come to church because they had neighbors who were truly loving in a way that was appealing and enticing and drew them into community. That's the great hope, that all might orient their lives toward the center, be known by the love that we have for one another, and change the world by making the need for barriers obsolete. Karen Armstrong, the famous British religion writer, published an autobiographical work a few years ago titled The Spiral Staircase. In it, she writes that religion is not about having to believe or accept certain difficult propositions. Instead, religion is about doing things that change you. The religious life, she concludes, is supposed to make people act in ways that change them forever. Peter was changed in this story. We are called to be changed by our interactions with others, to have our faith stretched and our love expanded in new and unforeseen ways as we reach out to others. But just as importantly, We are called to change others by our love. Not coercively, but decisively, as we embody God's love for them and point them toward the center. This is no longer a religion of walls, boundaries, and barriers. That's part of the new commandment that Jesus left. We are a religion bound by our focus, not on holding the perimeter, but on grasping the hand of the other and inviting them to the banquet at the very center of our faith. Jesus is begging us to stop keeping people out. The whole point was to draw people in. You can't teach people about love and refuse to eat with them at the same time. As they come to the table, hands out, wanting to experience this thing, they glimpse the love of God and the love shared by those around the altar. That is the most holy moment, and we can never declare it unholy. Jesus wants us to refocus our lives on the center and not the periphery. And then, through acts of love, to help others to turn toward that center and start moving in closer. As soon as Peter finishes his vision, three men show up and put his new understanding into action. And Peter makes no distinction between them and us, the text says. I don't know who shows up next, wanting to eat at our table. But let us meet whoever it is with only the language of us. And by our shared love, may they know that we are his disciples, living lives focused on the Christ at the center and marked by our love for one another. Amen.